"What was that?" she asked, looking back at him. Storms. Save for that skin and the odd sing-song quality to her voice, she could have been a pretty Makabaki caravan girl. "That Parshman crew," he said. "What do they do to deserve such rough treatment?" He didn't actually expect an answer, but the Parsh woman followed his gaze, then shook her head.
"They harbored the false god, brought him into the very center among us."
"The Almighty?" She laughed.
"A real false god, a living one, like our living gods."
She looked up as one of the fused passed overhead. "There are lots who think the Almighty is real," Moash said.
"If that's the case, why are you pulling a sledge?"
She snapped her fingers, pointing. Moash picked up his rope, joining the other men in a double line. They merged with the enormous column of marching feet, scraping sledges and rattling wheels. The Parshendi wanted to arrive at the next town before an impending storm. They'd weathered both types, High Storm and Everstorm, sheltering in villages along the way. Moash fell into the steady rhythm of the work. It wasn't long until he was sweating. He'd grown accustomed to the colder weather in the east near the Frostlands. It was strange to be in a place where the sun felt hot on his skin, and now the weather here was turning toward summer. His sledge soon caught up to the Parshman crew. The two sledges walked side by side for a time, and Moash liked to think that keeping pace with his crew could motivate the poor Parshman. Then one of them slipped and fell, and the entire team lurched to a stop. The whipping began. The cries, the crack of leather on skin.
"That's enough."
Moash dropped his rope and stepped out of the line. His shocked overseers called after him, but didn't follow. Perhaps they were too surprised. He strode up to the Parshman sledge, where the slaves were struggling to pull themselves back up and start again. Several had bloodied faces and backs. The large Parshman who had slipped lay curled on the ground. His feet were bleeding. No wonder he'd had trouble walking. Two overseers were whipping him. Moash seized one by the shoulder and pushed him back.
"Stop it!" he snapped, then shoved the other overseer aside. "Don't you see what you're doing? You're becoming like us!"
The two overseers stared at him, dumbfounded.
"You can't abuse each other," Moash said. "You can't!"
He turned toward the fallen Parshman and extended a hand to help him up. But from the corner of his eye, he saw one of the overseers raise his arm. Moash spun and caught the whip that cracked at him, snatching it from the air and twisting it around his wrist to gain leverage. Then he yanked it, pulling the overseer stumbling toward him. Moash smashed a fist into his face, slamming him backward to the ground.
"Storms, that hurt!"
He shook his hand, which had clipped carapace on the side as he'd connected. He glared at the other overseer, who yelped and dropped his whip, jumping backward. Moash nodded once, then took the fallen slave by the arm and pulled him upright.
"Ride in the sledge. Heal those feet."
He took the Parshman slave's place in line and pulled the rope taut over his shoulder. By now, his own overseers had gathered their wits and chased after him. They conferred with the two that he'd confronted, one nursing a bleeding cut around his eye. Their conversation was hushed, urgent, and punctuated by intimidated glances toward him. Finally, they decided to let it be. Moash pulled the sledge with the Parshman, and they found someone to replace him on the other sledge. For a while, he thought more would come of it. He even saw one of the overseers conferring with a fused. But they didn't punish him. No one dared to again raise a whip against the Parshman crew the rest of the march. 49. Born Unto Light. 23 years ago. Dalinar pressed his fingers together, then rubbed them, scraping the dry red-brown moss against itself. The scratchy sound was unpleasantly similar to that of a knife along bone. He felt the warmth immediately, like an ember. A thin plume of smoke rose from his calloused fingers and struck below his nose, then parted around his face. Everything faded. The raucous sound of too many men in one room, the musky smell of their bodies pressed together. Euphoria spread through him like sudden sunlight on a cloudy day. He released a protracted sigh. He didn't even mind when Bashan accidentally elbowed him. Most places, being High Prince, would have won him a bubble of space, but at the stained wooden table in this poorly lit den, social standing was irrelevant. Here, with a good drink and a little help pressed between his fingers, he could finally relax. Here, nobody cared how presentable he was or if he drank too much. Here, he didn't have to listen to reports of rebellion and imagine himself out on those fields solving problems the direct way, sword in hand, thrill in his heart. He rubbed the moss more vigorously. "Don't think about war, just live in the moment," as Evie always said. Havar returned with drinks. The lean, bearded man studied the overcrowded bench, then set the drinks down and hauled a slumped drunk out of his spot. He squeezed in beside Bashan. Havar was light-eyed, good family, too. He'd been one of Dalinar's elites back when that had meant something, though now he had his own land and a high commission. He was one of the few who didn't salute Dalinar so hard you could hear it. Bashan, though. Well, Bashan was an odd one. Dark-eyed of the first non, the portly man had traveled half the world and encouraged Dalinar to go with him to see the other half. He still wore that stupid wide-brimmed floppy hat. Havar grunted, passing down the drinks. "Squeezing in beside you, Bashan, would be far easier if you didn't have a gut that stretched to next week."
"Just trying to do my duty, Bright Lord."
"Your duty?
Light eyes need folks to obey them, right? I'm making certain that you got lots to serve you, at least by weight."
Dalinar took his mug but didn't drink. For now, the fire moss was doing its job. His wasn't the only plume rising in the dim stone chamber. Gavilar hated the stuff, but then Gavilar liked his life now. In the center of the dim room, a pair of parshmen pushed tables aside, then started setting diamond chips on the floor. Men backed away, making space for a large ring of light. A couple of shirtless men pushed their way through the crowd. The room's general air of clumsy conversation turned to one of roaring excitement.
"Are we going to bet?" Havar asked.
"Sure," Bashan replied. "I'll put these three garnet marks on the shorter one."
"I'll take that bet," Havar said. "But not for the money. If I win, I want your hat."
"Deal! Ha! So you're finally going to admit how dashing it is?"
"Dashing? Storms, Bashan. I'm going to do you a favor and burn the thing."
Dalinar sat back, mind dulled by the fire moss.
"Burn my hat," Bashan said. "Storms, Havar. That's harsh. Just because you envy my dashing profile.
The only thing dashing about that hat is how it makes women run the other way.
It's exotic. From the West. Everyone knows fashion comes from the West."
"Yeah. From Leofor and Yezir. Where did you get that hat again?"
"The Pure Lake. Ah, that bastion of culture and fashion. Are you going shopping in Bavland next?" "Barmaids don't know the difference," Bashan grumbled. "Anyway, can we just watch the match? I'm looking forward to winning those marks off you."
He took a drink, but fingered his hat anxiously. Dalinar closed his eyes. He felt as if he could drift off, maybe get some sleep without worrying about Evie or dreaming of war. In the ring, bodies smacked against each other. That sound, the grunts of exertion as the wrestlers tried to push each other from the ring, reminded him of the battle. Dalinar opened his eyes, dropped the moss, and leaned forward. The shorter wrestler danced out of the other's grip. They revolved around one another, crouched, hands at the ready. When they locked again, the shorter man pushed his opponent off balance.
"Better stance," Dalinar thought. "Kept himself low. A taller fellow has gotten by too long on his strength and size. He's got terrible form."
The two strained, backing toward the edge of the ring before the taller man managed to trip them both. Dalinar stood up as others ahead of him raised their hands and cheered.
The contest, the fight. That led me to almost kill Gavilar.
Dalinar sat back down. The shorter man won. Havar sighed, but rolled a few glowing spheres to Bastion.
Double or nothing on the next bout?
Nah, Bastion said, hefting the marks. It should be enough.
For what?
To bribe a few influential young dandies into trying hats like mine, Bastion said. I tell you, once word gets out, everyone is going to be wearing them.
You're an idiot.
So long as I'm a fashionable one.
Dalinar reached to the floor and picked up the fire moss. He tossed it onto the table and stared at it, then took a pull from his mug of wine. The next wrestling match started, and he winced as the two competitors collided. Storms, why did he keep putting himself into situations like this?
Dalinar, Havar said. Any word yet on when we're going to the rift?
The rift? Bastion asked. What about it?
Are you dense? Havar said.
No, Bastion said. But I might be drunk. What's up with the rift?
Rumor is they want to set up their own high prince, Havar said.
Son of the old one. What was his name?
Tanalon, Dalinar said. But we're not going to be visiting the rift, Havar.
Surely the king can't...
We won't be going, Dalinar said. You've got men to train and I...
Dalinar drank more wine.
I'm going to be a father. My brother can handle the rift with diplomacy.
Havar leaned back, flippantly dropping his mug to the table.
The king can't politic his way past open rebellion, Dalinar.
Dalinar closed his fist around the fire moss, but didn't rub it. How much of his interest in the rift was his duty to protect Gavilar's kingdom, and how much was his craving to feel the thrill again? Damnation. He felt like half a man these days. One of the wrestlers had shoved the other from the ring, disturbing the line of lights. The loser was declared, and a parchment carefully reset the ring. As he did so, a master servant stepped up to Dalinar's table.
"Pardon, bright lord," he whispered. "But you should know, the feature match will have to be cancelled."
"What?" Bastion said. "What's wrong? Mark isn't going to fight?"
"Pardon," the master servant repeated, "but his opponent has stomach problems. The match must be cancelled."
Apparently, news was spreading through the room. The crowd manifested their disapproval with boos and curses, shouts, and spilled drinks. A tall, bald man stood at the side of the ring, bare-chested. He argued with several of the light-eyed organizers, pointing at the ring, anger spren boiling on the floor around him. To Dalinar, this racket sounded like the calls of battle. He closed his eyes and breathed it in, finding a euphoria far superior to the fire moss. Storms. He should have gotten drunker. He was going to slip. Might as well be quick about it, then. He tossed aside the fire moss and stood, then pulled off his shirt.
"Dalinar,"
Havar said,
"what are you doing?"
"Gavilar says I need to have more concern for our people's sorrows," Dalinar said, stepping up onto the table. "Seems like we've got a room full of sorrow here."
Havar gaped, jaw dropping.
"Bet on me," Dalinar said, "for old time's sake."
He leaped off the table on the other side, then shoved through the crowd.
"Someone tell that man he has a challenger!"
Silence spread from him like a bad smell. Dalinar found himself at the edge of the ring in a completely quiet room, packed with once rowdy men, both light-eyed and dark. The wrestler, Mach, stepped back, his dark green eyes wide, anger spren vanishing. He had a powerful build, arms that bulged like they were overstuffed. Word was he'd never been defeated.
"Well," Dalinar said, "you wanted a fight, and I need a workout."
"Bright lord," the man said, "this was to be a free-form bout. All hits and holds allowed."
"Excellent," Dalinar said.
"What? You worried about injuring your high prince? I promise you clemency for anything done to me."
"Hurting you?" the man said.
"Storms, that's not what I'm afraid of."
He shivered visibly,
and a Thalen woman, perhaps his manager, smacked him on the arm. She thought he'd been rude. The wrestler only bowed and backed away. Dalinar turned about the room, confronted by a sea of faces that suddenly seemed very uncomfortable. He'd broken some kind of rule here. The gathering dissolved, Parshman retrieving spheres from the ground. It seemed Dalinar had been too hasty to judge rank unimportant here. They'd suffered him as an observer, but he was not to participate. Damnation. He growled softly as he stalked to his bench, those anger spren following him on the floor. He took his shirt from Bashan with a swipe of the hand. Back with his elites, any man, from the lowest spearmen to the highest captains, would have sparred or wrestled with him. Storms he'd faced the cook several times, much to the amusement of everyone involved. He sat down and pulled on his shirt, stewing. He'd ripped the buttons free in removing it so quickly. The room fell silent as people continued to leave, and Dalinar just sat there, tense, his body still expecting the fight that would never come. No thrill. Nothing to fill him. Soon he and his friends were alone in the room, surveying empty tables, abandoned cups, and spilled drinks. The place somehow smelled even worse now than it had when crowded with men.
"Probably for the best, Bright Lord," Havar said.
"I want to be among soldiers again, Havar," Dalinar whispered. "I want to be marching again. Best sleep a man can get is after a long march. And damnation, I want to fight. I want to face someone who won't pull their punches because I'm a high prince."
"Then let's find such a fight, Dalinar," Havar said. "Surely the king will let us go. If not to the Rift, then to Herdaz or one of the Isles. We can bring him land, glory, honor."
"That wrestler," Dalinar said. "There was something to his words. He was certain I would hurt him."
Dalinar drummed his fingers on the table.
"Was he scared off because of my reputation in general, or is there something more specific?"
Bashan and Havar shared a look.
"When?"
Dalinar asked.
"Tavern fight," Havar said. "2 weeks back. Do you remember it?"
Dalinar remembered a haze of monotony broken by light, a burst of color in his life. Emotion. He breathed out.
"You told me everyone was fine."
"They lived," Havar said.
"One of the brawlers you fought will never walk," Bashan admitted. "Another had to have his arm removed. A third babbles like a child. His brain doesn't work anymore."
"That's far from fine," Dalinar snapped. "Pardon, Dalinar," Havar said. "But when facing the Blackthorn, that's as good as one can expect."
Dalinar crossed his arms on the table, grinding his teeth. The fire moss wasn't working. Yes, it gave him a quick rush of euphoria, but that only made him want the greater headiness of the thrill. Even now, he felt on edge. He had the urge to smash this table and everything in the room. He'd been so ready for the fight. He'd surrendered to the temptation, and then had the pleasure stolen from him. He felt all the shame of losing control, but none of the satisfaction of actually getting to fight. Dalinar seized his mug, but it was empty. Stormfather. He threw it and stood up, wanting to scream. He was fortunately distracted by the back door to the wrestling den inching open, revealing a familiar pale face. Toe wore Alethi clothing now, one of the new suits that Gavilar preferred, but it fit him poorly. He was too spindly. No man would ever mistake Toe, with that overcautious gait and wide-eyed innocence, for a soldier.
"Dalinar?"
he asked, looking over the spilled drinks and the locked sphere lamps on the walls.
"The guards said I could find you here. Was this a party?"
"Ah, Toe," Havar said, lounging back in his seat. "How could it have been a party without you?"
Toe's eyes flicked toward the chunk of fire moss on the ground nearby.
"I'll never understand what you see in these places, Dalinar."
"He's just getting to know the common people, Bright Lord," Bashan
said, pocketing the fire moss.
"You know us dark-eyed types. always wallowing in depravity. We need good role models, too.
He cut off as Dalinar raised his hand. He didn't need underlings to cover for him.
What is it, Toe?
Oh, the Rearin man said. They were going to send a messenger, but I wanted to deliver the news. My sister, you see. It's a little early, but the midwives aren't surprised. They say it's natural when...
Dalinar gasped, like he'd been punched in the stomach.
Early, midwife's sister.
He charged for the door and didn't hear the rest of what Toe said. Evie looked like she'd fought in a battle. He'd seen that expression on the faces of soldiers many times. That sweaty brow, that half-dazed, drowsy look. Exhaustion spren like jets in the air. These were the mark of a person pushed past the limits of what they thought they could do. She bore a smile of quiet satisfaction, a look of victory. Dalinar pushed past doting surgeons and midwives, stepping up to Evie's bed. She held out a limp hand, her left hand, which was wrapped only in a thin envelope that ended at the wrist. It would have been a sign of intimacy to an Alethi, but Evie still preferred that hand.
"The baby?"
he whispered, taking the hand.
"A son. Healthy and strong."
"A son? I have a son?"
Dalinar dropped to his knees beside the bed.
"Where is he?"
"Being washed, my lord," said one of the midwives. "He will be returned shortly."
"Torn buttons," Evie whispered. "You've been fighting again, Dalinar?"
"Just a small diversion."
"That's what you say each time."
Dalinar squeezed her hand through the envelope, too elated to prickle at the chastisement.
"You and Toe came here to Alethkar because you wanted someone to protect you. You sought out a fighter, Evie."
She squeezed his hand back. A nurse approached with a bundle in her arms, and Dalinar looked up, stunned, unable to rise.
"Now," the woman said, "many men are apprehensive at first when..."
She cut off as Dalinar found his strength and seized the child from her arms. He held the boy aloft in both hands, letting out a whooping laugh, glory spren bursting around him as golden spears.
"My son," he said.
"My lord," the nurse said, "be careful."
"He's a Kolin," Dalinar said, cradling the child. "He's made of hardy stuff."
He looked down at the boy, who, red-faced, wiggled and thrashed with his tiny fists. He had shockingly thick hair, black and blonde mixed. Good coloring, distinctive.
"May you have your father's strength," Dalinar thought, rubbing the child's face with his finger. "And at least some of your mother's compassion, little one."
Looking into that face, swelling with joy, Dalinar finally understood. This was why Gavilar thought so much about the future, about Alethkar, about crafting a kingdom that would last. Dalinar's life so far had stained him crimson and thrashed his soul. His heart was so crusted over with creme it might as well have been a stone. But this boy, he could rule the princedom, support his cousin the king, and live a life of honor.
"His name, Bright Lord?"
asked Ishal, an aged ardent from the Devatory of Purity.
"I would burn the proper glyph words if it pleases you."
"Name," Dalinar said. "Eduda."
"Light." He glanced toward Evie, who nodded in agreement.
"Without a suffix, my lord? Edodan? Edodal?"
"Lin,"
Dalinar whispered. "Born unto.
Adolin.
A good name, traditional, full of meaning." With regret, Dalinar surrendered the child to the nurses, who returned him to his mother, explaining that it was important to train the baby to suckle as soon as possible. Most in the room began to file out to offer privacy, and as they did, Dalinar caught sight of a regal figure standing at the back. How had he missed Gavilar there? Gavilar took him by the arm and gave him a good thump on the back as they left the chamber. Dalinar was so dazed he barely felt it. He needed to celebrate,
buy drinks for every man in the army, declare a holiday, or just run through the city whooping for joy. He was a father.
An excellent day, Gavilar said. A most excellent day.
How do you contain it?
Dalinar said.
This excitement.
Gavilar grinned.
I let the emotion be my reward for the work I have done.
Dalinar nodded, then studied his brother.
What?
Dalinar said.
Something is wrong.
Nothing.
Don't lie to me, brother.
I don't want to ruin your wonderful day.
Wondering will ruin it more than anything you could say, Gavilar. Out with it.
The king mulled, then nodded toward Dalinar's den. They crossed the main chamber, passing furniture that was far too showy, colorful with floral patterns and plush cushions. Evie's taste was partially to blame, though it was also just life these days. His life was plush. The den was more to his liking. A few chairs, a hearth, a simple rug.
A cabinet with various exotic and potent wines, each in a distinctive bottle.
They were the type it was almost ashamed to drink, as it spoiled the display.
It's your daughter, Dalinar guessed. Her lunacy.
Yasna is fine and recovering.
It's not that.
Gavilar frowned, his expression dangerous. He'd agreed to a crown after much debate. Sunmaker hadn't worn one, and the history said Ysera Elin refused them as well. But people did love symbols, and most Western kings wore crowns. Gavilar had settled upon a black iron circlet. The more Gavilar's hair grayed, the easier the crown was to see. A servant had set a fire in the hearth, though it was burning low, only a single flame spren crawling along the embers.
I am failing, Gavilar said.
What?
Rathalas, the rift.
But I thought...
Propaganda, Gavilar said, and tended to quiet critical voices in Kolinar. Tanalan is raising an army and settling into his fortifications. Worse, I think the other high princes are encouraging him. They want to see how I handle this.
He sneered.
There's talk I've grown soft over the years.
They're wrong.
Dalinar had seen it, these months living with Gavilar. His brother had not grown soft. He was still as eager for conquest as ever. He simply approached it differently. The clash of words, the maneuvering of princedoms into positions where they were forced to obey. The fire's embers seemed to pulse like a heartbeat.
Do you ever wonder about the time when this kingdom was truly great, Dalinar?
Gavilar asked.
When people looked to the Alethi? When kings sought their advice? When we were... radiant.
Traitors, Dalinar said.
Does the act of a single generation negate many generations of domination? We revere the Sunmaker when his reign lasted but the blink of an eye. Yet we ignore the centuries the Radiance led. How many desolations did they defend mankind?
The Ardents talked about this in prayers, didn't they? He tried to guess.
10?
A meaningless number, Gavilar said, waving his fingers. The histories just say 10 because it sounds significant. Either way, I have failed in my diplomatic efforts. He turned toward Dalinar. It is time to show the kingdom that we are not soft, brother.
Oh, no.
Hours ago, he would have leaped in excitement, but after seeing that child...
You'll be anxious again in a few days, Dalinar told himself. A man can't change in a moment. Gavilar, he whispered. I'm worried.
You're still the Black Thorn, Dalinar.
I'm not worried about whether I can win battles.
Dalinar stood, throwing back his chair in his haste. He found himself pacing.
I'm like an animal, Gavilar. Did you hear about the bar fight? Storms, I can't be trusted around people.
You are what the Almighty made you.
I'm telling you, I'm dangerous. Sure, I can crush this little rebellion, bathe Oathbringer in some blood. Great, wonderful. Then what? I come back here and lock myself in a cage again? I might have something that will help.
Bah! I've tried living a quiet life. I can't live through endless politics like you can. I need more than just words.
You've merely been trying to restrain yourself. You've tried casting out the bloodthirst, but you haven't replaced it with anything else. Go do what I command, then return and we can discuss further.
Dalinar stopped near his brother, then took a single purposeful step into his shadow.
Remember this. Remember you serve him.
He would never return to that place that had almost led him to attack this man.
When do I ride for the rift? Dalinar asked.
You don't. But you just said, I'm sending you to battle, but not against the rift. Our kingdom suffers threats from abroad. There is a new dynasty threatening us from Herdaz. A Reshi house has gained power there, and the Vaidens have been raiding Alethkar in the southwest. They're claiming it's bandits, but the forces are too organized. It's a test to see how we react.
Dalinar nodded slowly.
You want me to go fight on our borders? Remind everyone we're still capable of employing the sword.
Exactly. This is a dangerous time for us, brother. The High Prince's question. Is a united Alethkar worth the trouble? Why bow before a king?
Tanalan is the manifestation of their questions, but he has been careful not to stray into outright rebellion.
If you attack him, the other High Princes could unite behind the rebels. We could shatter the kingdom and have to start all over. I will not allow that. I will have a unified Alethkar. Even if I have to hit the High Princes so hard they are forced to melt together from the heat of it. They need to remember that. Go to Herdaz first, then Yakaved. Remind everyone why they fear you.
Gavilar met Dalinar's eyes. No, he was not soft. He thought like a king now. He sought the long term, but Gavilar Kholin was as determined as ever.
It will be done, Dalinar said. Storms this day had been a tempest of emotion.
Dalinar stalked toward the door. He wanted to see the child again.
Brother, Gavilar said.
Dalinar turned back and regarded Gavilar, who was bathed by the bleeding light of a fire reaching its end.
Words are important, Gavilar said. Much more than you give them credit for being.
Perhaps, Dalinar said.
But if they were all-powerful, you wouldn't need my sword, would you?
Perhaps. I can't help feeling words would be enough, if only I knew the right ones to say.
50. Shash 37.
We also instruct that you should not return to Obra Dei. We have claimed that world, and a new avatar of our being is beginning to manifest there. She is young yet, and, as a precaution, she has been instilled with an intense and overpowering dislike of you. To Dalinar, flying felt much like being on a ship in the ocean. There was something profoundly disconcerting about being out on the ocean, subject to the winds and currents. Men didn't control the waves, they merely set out and prayed that the ocean didn't decide to consume them. Flying alongside Captain Kaladin provoked some of the same emotions in Dalinar. On one hand, the view over the shattered plains was magnificent. He felt he could almost see the pattern to it that Shallan mentioned. On the other hand, this kind of travel was deeply unnatural. Winds buffeted them, and if you moved your hands or arched your back in the wrong way, you were sent in a different direction from everyone else. Kaladin had to constantly zip back and forth, riding one of them that got blown off course. And if you looked down, and paused to consider exactly how high up you were? Well, Dalinar was not a timid man, but he was still glad of Navani's hand in his. On his other side flew Elokar, and beyond him were Kadash and a pretty young Ardent who served as one of Navani's scholars. The five of them were escorted by Kaladin and 10 of his squires.
The Windrunners had been training steadily for 3 weeks now, and Kaladin had finally, after practicing by flying groups of soldiers back and forth to the war camps, agreed to treat Dalinar and the king to a similar trip.
"It is like being on a ship," Dalinar thought.
What would it feel like to be up here during a high storm? That was how Kaladin planned to get Elikar's team to Kolinar, fly them at the leading edge of a storm so his stormlight was continually renewed.
"You're thinking of me," the Stormfather said. "I can feel it."
"I'm thinking of how you treat ships," Dalinar whispered, his physical voice lost to the winds, yet his meaning carried unhampered to the Stormfather.
"Men should not be upon the waters during a storm," he replied. "Men are not of the waves."
"And the sky? Are men of the sky?"
"Some are,"
he said this grudgingly. Dalinar could only imagine how terrible it must be to be a sailor out at sea during a storm. He had taken only short coastwise trips by ship.
"No, wait," he thought. "There was one, of course. A trip to the valley."
He barely remembered that voyage, though he could not blame that solely upon the Night Watcher. Captain Kaladin swooped over. He was the only one who seemed truly in control of his flying. Even his men flew more like dropped rocks than sky eels. They lacked his finesse, his control. Though the others could help if something went wrong, Kaladin had been the only one lashing Dalinar and the others. He said he wanted practice for the eventual flight to Kolinar. Kaladin touched Elokar, and the king started to slow. Kaladin then moved down the line, slowing each in turn. He then swept them up so they were close enough to speak. His soldiers stopped and floated nearby.
"What's wrong?"
Dalinar asked, trying to ignore that he was hanging hundreds of feet in the sky.
"Nothing's wrong," Kaladin said, then pointed.
With the wind in his eyes, Dalinar had failed to spot the war camps. 10 crater-like circles arrayed along the northwestern edge of the shattered plains. From up here, it was obvious they had once been domes, the way their walls curved, like cupping fingers from underneath. 2 of the war camps were still fully occupied, and Sabariel had set up forces to lay claim to the nearby forest. Dalinar's own war camp was less populated, but had a few platoons of soldiers and some workers.
"We arrived so quickly,"
Navani said. Her hair was a wind-tousled mess, much of it having escaped her careful braid. Elikar hadn't fared much better. His hair sprayed out from his face like waxed Thalen eyebrows. The 2 Ardents, of course, were bald and didn't have such worries.
"Quick indeed," Elikar said, redoing a few buttons of his uniform. "This is most promising for our mission."
"Yeah," Kaladin said. "I still want to test it more in front of a storm."
He took the king by the shoulder, and Elikar started to drift downward. Kaladin sent them each down in turn, and when his feet finally touched stone again, Dalinar heaved a sigh of relief. They were only 1 plateau over from the war camp, where a soldier at a watch post waved to them with eager, exaggerated movements. Within minutes, a troop of Kolin soldiers had surrounded them.
"Let's get you inside the walls, Brightlord," their captain lord said, hand on the pommel of his sword. "The shellheads are still active out here."
"Have they attacked this close to the camps?" Elikar asked, surprised.
"No, but that doesn't mean they won't, Your Majesty."
Dalinar wasn't so worried, but said nothing as the soldiers ushered him and the others into the war camp where Brightness Yasalai, the tall, stately woman Dalinar had put in charge of the camp, met and accompanied them. After spending so much time in the alien hallways of Yuvathiru, walking through this place, which had been Dalinar's home for 5 years, was relaxing. Part of that was finding the war camp mostly intact. It had weathered the Everstorm quite well. Most of the buildings were stone bunkers, and that western rim of the former dome had provided a solid windbreak.
"My only worry," he told Yasalai after a short tour, "is about logistics. This is a long march from Narak and the Oathgate. I fear that by dividing our forces among Narak, here, and Yuvathiru, we're increasing our vulnerability to an attack."
"That is true, Bright Lord," the woman said. "I endeavor only to provide you with options."
Unfortunately, they would probably need this place for farming operations, not to mention the lumber. Plateau runs for gem hearts couldn't sustain the tower's city population forever, particularly in the face of Shallan's assessment that they had likely hunted chasm fiends near to extinction. Dalinar glanced at Navani. She thought they should found a new kingdom here, on and around the Shattered Plains. Import farmers, retire older soldiers, start production here on a much larger scale than they'd ever tried before. Others disagreed. There was a reason the unclaimed hills weren't densely inhabited. It would be a harsh life here. Rock buds grew smaller, crops would be less productive. And founding a new kingdom during a desolation? Better to protect what they had. Alethkar could probably feed Urethiru, but that depended on Kaladin and Elikar recovering the capital. Their tour ended with a meal at Dalinar's bunker, in his former sitting room, which looked bare now that most of the furniture and rugs had been removed to Urethiru. After the meal, he found himself standing by the window, feeling oddly out of place. He'd left this war camp only 10 weeks ago, but the place was at once deeply familiar and also no longer his. Behind him, Navani and her scribe ate fruit as they chatted quietly over some sketches that Navani had done.
"Oh, but I think that the others need to experience that brightness," the scribe said. "The flight was remarkable. How fast do you think we were going? I believe we might have attained a speed that no human has reached since the Recreants. Think about that, Navani. Surely we were faster than the fastest horse or ship."
"Focus, Rushu," Navani said. "My sketch."
"I don't think this math is right, Brightness. No, that sail will never stand."
"It's not meant to be completely accurate," Navani said. "Just a concept. My question is, can it work?"
"We'll need more reinforcement." "Yes, more reinforcement for certain. And then the steering mechanism, definitely work to do there. This is clever, though, Brightness. Falalar needs to see it. He will be able to say whether or not it can be built."
Dalinar glanced away from the window, catching Navani's eye. She smiled. She always claimed that she wasn't a scholar, but a patron of scholars. She said her place was to encourage and guide the real scientists. Anyone who saw the light in her eyes as she took out another sheet and sketched her idea further knew she was being too modest. She began another sketch, but then stopped and glanced to the side where she'd set out a span reed. The ruby was blinking.
"Fen," Dalinar thought.
The Queen of Thelena had asked that, in this morning's high storm, Dalinar send her into the vision of Ahare Etiam, which she knew about from the published accounts of Dalinar's visions. He'd reluctantly sent her alone, without supervision. They'd been waiting for her to speak of the event, to say anything. In the morning, she hadn't replied to their requests for a conversation. Navani prepared the span reed, then set it writing. It scribbled for only a brief moment.
"That was short," Dalinar said, stepping toward her.
"Only one word,"
Navani said. She looked up at him.
"Yes."
Dalinar heaved out a long breath. She was willing to visit Urethiru.
Finally.
"Tell her we'll send her a radiant."
He left the window, watching as she replied. In her sketchpad, he caught sight of some kind of ship-like contraption, but with the sail on the bottom. What in the world? Fen seemed content to leave the conversation there, and Navani returned to her discussion of engineering, so Dalinar slipped from the room. He passed through his bunker, which felt hollow, like the rind of a fruit with the pulp scooped out. No servants scuttling back and forth, no soldiers. Kaladin and his men had gone off somewhere, and Kadash was probably at the camp monastery. He'd been keen to get there, and Dalinar had been gratified by his willingness to fly with Kaladin. They hadn't spoken much since their confrontation in the sparring room. Well, perhaps seeing the Windrunner's power firsthand would improve Kadash's opinion of the Radiance. Dalinar was surprised, and secretly pleased, to find that no guards had been posted at the bunker's back door. He slipped out alone and headed to the War Camp Monastery. He wasn't looking for Kadash. He had another purpose. He soon arrived at the monastery, which looked like most of the war camp, a collection of buildings with the same smooth, rounded construction, crafted from the air by Alethi soulcasters. This place had a few small, hand-built buildings of cut stone, but they looked more like bunkers than places of worship. Dalinar had never wanted his people to forget that they were at war. He strolled through the campus and found that, without a guide, he didn't know his way among the nearly identical structures. He stopped in a courtyard between buildings. The air smelled of wet stone from the high storm, and a nice group of shellbark sculptures rose to his right, shaped like stacks of square plates. The only sound was water dripping from the eaves of the buildings. Storms, he should know his way around his own monastery, shouldn't he? How often did you actually visit here during all the years in the war camps? He'd meant to come more often and talk to the Ardents in his chosen devotary. There had always been something more pressing, and besides, the Ardents stressed that he didn't need to come. They had prayed and burned glyph wards on his behalf. That was why High Lords owned Ardents. Even during his darkest days of war, they'd assured him that, in pursuing his calling, by leading his armies, he served the Almighty. Dalinar stooped into a building that had been divided into many small rooms for prayers. He walked down a hallway until he stepped through a storm door into the atrium, which still smelled faintly of incense. It seemed insane that the Ardents would be angry with him now, after training him his whole life to do as he wished. But he'd upset the balance, rocked the boat. He moved among braziers filled with wet ash. Everyone liked the system they had. The Light Eyes got to live without guilt or burden, always confident that they were active manifestations of God's will. The Dark Eyes got free access to training in a multitude of skills. The Ardents got to pursue scholarship. The best of them lived lives of service. The worst lived lives of indolence. But what else were important light-eyed families going to do with unmotivated children? A noise drew his attention, and he left the courtyard and looked into a dark corridor. Light poured from a room at the other end, and Dalinar was not surprised to find Kadash inside. The Ardent was moving some ledgers and books from a wall safe into a pack on the floor. On a desk nearby, a span reed scribbled. Dalinar stepped into the room. The scarred Ardent jumped, then relaxed when he saw it was Dalinar. "Do we need to have this conversation again, Dalinar?" he asked, turning back to his packing. "No," Dalinar said. "I didn't actually come looking for you. I want to find a man who lived here, a madman who claimed to be one of the heralds." Kadash cocked his head. "Ah, yes. The one who had a shard blade? All of the other patients at the monastery are accounted for, safe at Urethiru, but he vanished somehow. I was hoping to see if his room offered any clues to what became of him." Kadash looked at him, gauging his sincerity. Then the Ardent sighed, rising. "That's a different devotary from mine," he said. "But I have occupancy records here. I should be able to tell you which room he was in." "Thank you." Kadash looked through a stack of ledgers. "Shash building," he finally said, pointing absently out the window. "That one right there, room 37. Insa ran the facility. Her records will list details of the madman's treatment. If her departure from the war camp was anything like mine, she'll have left most of her paperwork behind." He gestured toward the safe and his packing. "Thank you," Dalinar said. He moved to leave. "You think the madman was actually a herald, don't you?"
"I think it's likely."
He spoke with a rural Alethi accent, Dalinar. "And he looked Makabaki," Dalinar replied. "That alone is an oddity, wouldn't you say? Immigrant families are not so uncommon. Ones with shard blades?" Kadash shrugged.
Let's say I could actually find one of the heralds, Dalinar said. Let's say we could confirm his identity and you accepted that proof. Would you believe him if he told you the same things I have?
Kadash sighed.
Surely you'd want to know if the Almighty were dead, Kadash, Dalinar said, stepping back into the room. Tell me you wouldn't. You know what it would mean? It would mean there is no spiritual basis for your rule. I know. And the things you did in conquering Alethkar, Kadash said. No divine mandate, Dalinar. Everyone accepts what you did because your victories were proof of the Almighty's favor. Without him, then what are you? Tell me, Kadash, would you really rather not know?
Kadash looked at the span reed, which had stopped writing. He shook his head.
I don't know, Dalinar. It certainly would be easier. Isn't that the problem? What has any of this ever required of men like me? What has it required of any of us? It required you to be what you are, which is self-fulfilling, Dalinar said. You were a swordsman, Kadash. Would you have gotten better without opponents to face? Would you have gotten stronger without weights to lift? Well, in Boronism, we've spent centuries avoiding the opponents and the weights.
Again, Kadash glanced at the span reed.
What is it? Dalinar asked. I left most of my span reeds behind, Kadash explained. When I went with you toward the center of the Shattered Plains, I took only the span reed linked to an ardent transfer station in Kolinar. I thought that would be enough, but it no longer works. I've been forced to use intermediaries in Tashik.
Kadash lifted a box onto the desk and opened it. Inside were five more span reeds with blinking rubies indicating that someone had been trying to contact Kadash.
These are links to the leaders of Voronism in Yarkaved, Herdaz, Karbranth, Thelona, and New Natnan,
Kadash said, counting them off.
They had a meeting via reeds today discussing the nature of the desolation and the Everstorm. And perhaps you. I mentioned I was going to recover my own span reeds today. Apparently their meeting has made them all very eager to question me further.
He let the silence hang between them, measured out by the five blinking red lights.
What of the one that is writing? Dalinar asked. A line to the Palinaeum and the heads of Voron Research there. They've been working on the Dawn Chant using the clues Brightness Navani gave them from your visions. What they've sent me are relevant passages from ongoing translations. Proof, Dalinar said. You wanted solid proof that what I've been seeing is real.
He strode forward, grabbing Kadash by the shoulders.
You waited for that reed first before answering the leaders of Voronism? I wanted all the facts in hand. So you know that the visions are real? I long ago accepted that you weren't mad. These days it's more a question of who might be influencing you. Why would the Voidbringers give me these visions? Dalinar said. Why would they grant us great powers, like the one that flew us here? It's not rational, Kadash.
Neither is what you're saying about the Almighty.
He held up a hand to cut off Dalinar.
I don't want to have this argument again. Before you asked me for proof that we are following the Almighty's precepts, right? All I asked for and all I want is the truth. We have it already. I'll show you.
I look forward to it, Dalinar said, walking to the door.
But Kadash, in my painful experience, the truth may be simple, but it is rarely easy.
Dalinar crossed to the next building over and counted down the rooms. Storms, this building felt like a prison. Most of the doors hung open, revealing uniform chambers beyond. Each had one tiny window, a slab for a bed, and a thick wooden door. The Ardents knew what was best for the sick. They had access to all the world's latest research in all fields. But was it really necessary to lock madmen away like this? Number 37 was still bolted shut. Dalinar rattled the door, then threw his shoulder against it. Storms, it was thick. Without thinking, he put his hand to the side and tried summoning his shard blade. Nothing happened.
"What are you doing?"
the Stormfather demanded.
"Sorry," Dalinar said, shaking his hand out. "Habit."
He crouched down and tried peeking under the door, then called out, suddenly horrified by the idea that they might have simply left the man in here to starve. That couldn't have happened, could it?
"My powers," Dalinar said, rising. "Can I use them?" "Binding things?" the Stormfather said. "How would that open a door? You are a bondsmith. You bring things together. You do not divide them."
"And my other surge?" Dalinar said.
"That radiant in the vision made stone warp and ripple." "You are not ready. Besides, that surge is different for you than it is for a stone ward."
Well, from what Dalinar could see underneath the door, there seemed to be light in this room. Perhaps it had a window to the outside he could use. On his way out, he poked through the ardent chambers until he found an office like Kadash's. He didn't find any keys, though the desk still had pens and ink sitting on it. They'd left in haste, so there was a good chance the wall safe contained records. But of course, Dalinar couldn't get in. Storms, he missed having a shard blade. He rounded the outside of the building to check the window, then immediately felt silly for spending so much time trying to get through the door. Somebody else had already cut a hole in the stone out here, using the distinctive clean slices of a shard blade. Dalinar stepped inside, picking his way around the broken remnants of the wall which had fallen inward, indicating that the shard-bearer had cut from the outside. He found no madman. The Ardens had likely seen this hole and moved on with their evacuation. News of the strange hole must not have filtered up to the lead Ardens. He didn't find anything to indicate where the Herald had gone, but at least he knew a shard-bearer was involved. Someone powerful had wandered into this room, which lent even more credence to the madman's claims of being a Herald. So who had taken him? Or had they done something to him instead? What happened to a Herald's body when they died? Could someone else have come to the same conclusion that Jasnah had? As he was about to leave, Dalinar spotted something on the ground beside the bed. He knelt down, shooed away a kremling, and picked up a small object. It was a dart, green with yellow twine, wrapped around it. He frowned, turning it over in his fingers. Then he looked up as he heard someone distantly calling his name. He found Kaladin out in the monastery courtyard calling for him. Dalinar approached, then handed him the little dart.
"Ever seen anything like this before, Captain?"
Kaladin shook his head. He sniffed at the tip, then raised his eyebrows. "That's poison on the tip. Blackbane derived."
"Are you sure?"
Dalinar asked, taking the dart back.
"Very. Where did you find it?"
"In the chamber that housed the Herald."
Kaladin grunted.
"You need more time for your search?"
"Not much," Dalinar said. "Though it would help if you'd summon your shard blade."
A short time later, Dalinar handed Navani the records he'd taken from the Ardent's safe. He dropped the dart in a pouch and handed it over as well, warning her about the poisoned tip. One by one, Kaladin sent them into the sky, where his bridgemen caught them and used stormlight to stabilize them. Dalinar was last, and as Kaladin reached for him, he took the captain by the arm.
"You want to practice flying in front of a storm," Dalinar said. "Could you get to Thelanar?"
"Probably," Kaladin said, "if I lashed myself southward as fast as I can go."
"Go then," Dalinar said. "Take someone with you to test flying another person in front of a storm if you want. But get to Thelan City. Queen Fenn is willing to join us, and I want that Oathgate active. The world has been turning before our very noses, Captain. Gods and heralds have been warring, and we were too focused on our petty problems to even notice."
"I'll go next Highstone," Kaladin said,
then sent Dalinar soaring up into the air. 51. Full Circle. This is all we will say at this time. If you wish more, seek these waters in person and overcome the tests we have created.
Only in this will you earn our respect. The Parshman of Moash's new sledge crew didn't like him. That didn't bother him. Lately, he didn't much like himself. He didn't expect or need their admiration. He knew what it felt like to be beaten down, despised. When you'd been treated as they had, you didn't trust someone like Moash. You asked yourself what he was trying to get from you. After a few days of pulling their sledge, the landscape began to change. The open plains became cultivated hills. They passed great sweeping wards, artificial stone ridges, built by planting sturdy wooden barricades to collect creme during storms. The creme would harden, slowly building up a mound on the stormward side. After a few years, you raised the top of the barricade. They took generations to grow to useful sizes, but here, around the oldest, most populated centers of Alethkar, they were common. They looked like frozen waves of stone, stiff and straight on the western side, sloping and smooth on the other side. In their shadows, vast orchards spread in rows, most of the trees cultivated to grow no more than the height of a man. The western edge of those orchards was ragged with broken trees. Barriers would need to be erected to the west as well now. He expected the fused to burn the orchards, but they didn't. During a water break, Moash studied one of them. A tall woman who hovered a dozen feet in the air, toes pointed downward. Her face was more angular than those of the Parshman. She resembled a spren the way she hung there, an impression accented by her flowing clothing. Moash leaned back against his sledge and took a pull on his water skin. Nearby, an overseer watched him and the Parshman of his crew. She was new, a replacement for the one he'd punched. A few more of the fused passed on horses, trotting the beasts with obvious familiarity. That variety doesn't fly, he thought. They can raise the dark light around themselves, but it doesn't give them lashings. Something else. He glanced back at the one nearest him, the one hovering. But that type almost never walks. It's the same kind that captured me. Kaladin wouldn't have been able to stay aloft as long as these did. He'd run out of stormlight. She's studying those orchards, Moash thought. She looks impressed. She turned in the air and soared off, long clothing rippling behind her. Those overlong robes would have been impractical for anyone else, but for a creature who almost always flew, the effect was mesmerizing. This isn't what I was supposed to be like, Moash said. Nearby, one of the Parshmen of his crew grunted.
Tell me about it, human.
Moash glanced at the man who had settled down in the shade of their lumber-laden sledge. The Parshman was tall, with rough hands, mostly dark skin, marbled with lines of red. The others had called him Sa, a simple Alethi Dark Eyes name. Moash nodded his chin toward the Voidbringers. They were supposed to sweep in relentlessly, destroying everything in their path. They are literally incarnations of destruction.
And?
Saw asked. And that one, Moash said, pointing toward the flying Voidbringer, is pleased to find these orchards here. They only burned a few towns. They seem intent on keeping Revelar working it. Moash shook his head. This was supposed to be an apocalypse, but you don't farm an apocalypse.
Saw grunted again.
He didn't seem to know any more about this than Moash did, but why should he? He'd grown up in a rural community in Alethkar. Everything he knew about history and religion, he'd have heard filtered through the human perspective.
You shouldn't speak so casually about the fused human, Saw said, standing up. They're dangerous.
Don't know about that, Moash said, as two more passed overhead. The one I killed went down easy enough, though I don't think she was expecting me to be able to fight back. He handed his water skin to the overseer as she came around for them. Then he glanced at Saw, who was staring at him, slack-jawed. Probably shouldn't have mentioned killing one of their gods, Moash thought, walking to his place in line, last, closest to the sledge,
so he stared at a sweaty Parshman back all day. They started up again, and Moash expected another long day's work. These orchards meant Kolinar itself was a little over a day's hike away at an easy pace. He figured the Voidbringers would push them hard to reach the capital by nightfall. He was surprised, then, when the army diverged from the direct route. They wove between some hillsides until they reached a town, one of the many suburbs of Kolinar. He couldn't recall the name. The tavern had been nice and welcoming to caravaneers. Clearly there were other Voidbringer armies moving through Alethkar, because they'd obviously seized this city days, if not weeks ago. Parshmen patrolled it, and the only humans he saw were already working the fields. Once the army arrived, the Voidbringers surprised Moash again by selecting some of the wagon pullers and setting them free. They were the weaklings, the ones who had fared worst on the road. The overseers sent them trudging toward Kolinar, which was still too far off to see.
They're trying to burden the city with refugees, Moash thought, ones that aren't fit to work or fight anymore.
The main bulk of the army moved into the large storm bunkers in this suburb. They wouldn't attack the city immediately. The Voidbringers would rest their armies, prepare, and besiege. In his youth, he'd wondered why there weren't any suburbs closer than a day's walk from Kolinar. In fact, there was nothing between its walls and here, only empty flats. Even the hills there had been mined down centuries ago. The purpose was clear to him now. If you wanted to lay siege to Kolinar, this was the closest you could put your army. You couldn't camp in the city's shadow. You'd be swept away by the first storm. In the town, the supply sledges were split, some sent down one street, which looked hauntingly empty to him, while his went down another. They actually passed the tavern he'd preferred, the Fallen Tower. He could see the glyph etched into the leeward stone. Finally, his crew was called to a halt, and he let go of the rope, stretching his hands and letting out a relieved sigh. They'd been sent to a large open ground near some warehouses where Parshmen were cutting lumber. A lumber yard? He thought, then felt stupid. After hauling wood all this way, what else would he expect? Still,